Hello and welcome to Missing Mystic Falls, where we cast a critical eye over every single episode of the hit CW show, The Vampire Diaries. I'm Catherine, and we're doing something a little bit different today. I'm joined by my co-host, Alice. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Catherine.
And then we are also joined by a woman affectionately known as the crying girl picking up Pringles, Ellie.
Hello.
Any idea why you get an extra special intro today?
No, I was so scared.
It's because this is your birthday episode.
Is it?
Happy birthday, Ellie.
How fun.
Happy birthday.
I was like so scared when Alice got the introduction first and I was like, oh God, what's coming out?
No. So we record in advance. So it's not Ellie's birthday today, but this is the episode nearest to your birthday when it gets released. So,
oh, well, happy birthday. How fun.
So Alice gets a week off.
Woohoo!
You look so smug over there, just like really happy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Today we are talking about season 1, episode 9, History Repeating. The episode first aired on the 12th of November, 2009. It was written by Brian N. Holman and Brian Young and directed by Marcus Seeger, who's already directed, all of them have written and directed episodes before in this season, but I had a little look at Marcus because I hadn't done before, and he has directed a fair few episodes of the TV show You.
Has he?
And that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Which ones of You?
All in season one.
Interesting.
So all in Beck's season. So in today's episode, Jeremy gets a break from the mysterious new history teacher Alaric, who then goes and hits it off with Jenna. Bonnie is having terrifying dreams about one of her ancestors, so the girls hold a séance to help them decide what to do. And Damon finally reveals to Stefan the stunning reason he returned to Mystic Falls.
So much in one episode.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of revelations in this episode as well.
So many revelations. But I found throughout the whole episode it was quite funny, the difference between each bits, like the girls having an absolutely terrifying séance and Damon and Stefan just playing like vampire football at the school.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a funny switch, which I enjoyed because it lightens up different bits. Yeah. But also each bit was really gripping because there was a lot that you had to find out, or you did find out as the audience.
I also thought the entrance was very different to usual. Like every other one, we've kind of had something that's been off the bat creepy. And I know this one turns creepy, but I think the setting of the classroom, I think it's a real, almost like, oh, this feels like a very different entrance. It's focused on Bonnie, which is good. It kind of mirrors the end of the last episode where she's having the dreams about Emily Bennett, and then obviously Emily Bennett appears, but it's almost like an inception where it's like, what's real, what's the dream?
Yeah, and we saw finally another class. I know it was a dream, but we finally saw another class other than history and another teacher.
I wrote that down. No, it does start off like you think it's going to be a really boring start. They're just in school and it turns creepy. But yeah, we know that they'd study something else other than history at the school.
Woo, maths!
Or at least we know that Bonnie dreams about studying anything but history. Maybe it is just a fantasy.
And she's like, if only.
I do want to shout out the incredible side eye from the extra when Bonnie woke up from like the first one of her dreams in the classroom. He was giving her such a look when she, like, what is she doing? I loved it.
Do you wonder how much side eye they give Bonnie, like, of all the times, if that was like a starring moment in her nightmare?
Yeah. She's well used to people looking at her a bit funny.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a really gripping start of Emily being like, this is where I wrote it down. She goes like, this is where it started and this is where it needs to end. And I was watching it like, where what started, where what needs to end. And I'm really, really, I think as the audience, you're like already gripped and wanting to know what was happening.
Yeah. We also meet Alaric Saltzman in this episode.
A new history teacher.
A brand new, finally, someone is caring about the education of these students. Okay.
there's clearly a lot of notes here.
he walked into the classroom, he writes his name on the board, and he introduces himself to the students in the most bizarre way.
Why is he going into the history of his name?
Okay, those are the exact words I wrote down. But even before then, he's taking ages to write his name. And I know Alaric Saltzman is like quite a long name, but he's taking ages. And there are a few like pained noises, you know, where he was like,
as he's writing. The actor was remembering how to spell it.
Yeah.
As he went along.
The bit I was thinking of, I haven't actually seen this episode, but it's appearing a lot in my like Instagram reels at the moment of Ted Mosby in How I Met Your Mother, where he can't spell professor. Yeah. He's like, is it two F's? Is it one? That's the vibe it was giving me when Alaric was writing his name.
And he says the students can call him Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's bizarre because I feel like this isn't really a spoiler. But they don't. They're meant to call him Mr. Saltzman. And that's what they do.
People don't call their teachers by their first name in America, do they?
I don't know. I think it might be the same as it is like in the UK where it depends on your school. Because I think there are some schools where you can.
Yeah, I went to a first name college. But Mr. Tanner was known as Mr. Tanner, never the first name. I think it's a little bit inappropriate, but you know. Start as he means to go on.
I think it's very much like he's trying to be the cool teacher. Like when Jeremy comes in and Rick throws away Mr. Tanner's jackass pile, which we can get onto in a minute. I think it's like he's trying to be like, I don't care. You have a clean slate with me. He's trying to be the like cool, approachable, fun teacher that anyone can come to for anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Can't believe Mr. Tanner has a burn book of the student.
A burn book of Jeremy.
Yeah, as we said. When he was alive, he is a small man with a petty little life because clearly he cares way too much about Jeremy Gilbert.
He's here for the drama.
I'm so happy we have another excuse to hate on Mr. Tanner. I thought we would be done with this by now.
Also, in that kind of interaction with Jeremy, you notice Alaric's ring and it looks like Stefan and Damon. So it kind of builds up the suspicion, like, is Rick a vampire?
Yeah, that's clearly what they want us to think this episode.
100%. Does Rick have a daylight ring? Because in the last episode, Lexi very much gave the impression that it was just the Salvatore brothers who had a daylight ring.
Yeah. Well, later he doesn't enter the Gilbert house because they make a big point of saying he's not invited in, so he doesn't go in. So,
and he looks weirdly round the door. His eyeline goes all the way around the door frame.
Oh, yeah. He looked weird this episode in general. If we can have some hair talk.
Oh, yeah. Rick's hair was poor.
It was too short.
Oh, yeah. It was like how Paul Wesley's hair was like way too short in the pilot, like his pre-hero hair. But in general, yeah. I thought Rick throughout this whole episode was weird. Like, why did he walk all the way over to Jenna and Jeremy at the grill when they're having dinner? And then why do Rick and Jeremy already have a handshake?
Oh, the handshake. I laughed out loud when I saw that. He actually heads over there just to talk to Jeremy, to talk about this history project that he's given him, which is yet again to write about Mystic Falls.
Obviously.
No, but at first, when he gives him the project, he's like, write anything about history. And it's like, obviously, you're a history teacher. Then he narrows it down to, of course, the only topic that they learn about
is Mystic Falls.
The most important history.
What I can't understand is, like, Rick was like, oh, there's always new things to uncover or something. Or he was like, there's loads of rich history here. But what you've got to remember, this is a high school with, what, like, 50 to 100 kids a year who only write about Mystic Falls. And it's only been a town for 140 years. Surely we've carved through all the history that there is. Surely there is no stone that can be unturned.
Also, Jeremy is using his family journals. It's already been written down and is available to, I think, quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it seems like a town where there can be Gilbert journals, Fell journals, Lockwood journals.
Only founder journals, obviously.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, God. I just, the handshake took my breath away.
Yeah.
It's because he's a cool guy.
And then on that storyline as well, Rick and Jenna are flirting a lot and poorly. But
oh, I found Jenna really cringy. With her. I did like her. I like a man who can dine alone.
Oh, yeah. And to be like, Jeremy's ditched me. It's like, you live in the same house. You could have gone home with him as well.
Well, she wanted to flirt with him. Yeah. It was when she was, I don't know, immediately meets him and starts talking about Logan. It was just a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just some of the flirting even back at the house when it was like, oh, me in high school, A cup. And like, oh, it was like, oh, no. But Alaric also mentions his dead wife, which I feel like is another angle that we're meant to kind of think
Jenna likes that he has a dead wife. Do you not think?
Oh yeah, I think she thinks he's committed.
There's nothing more sexier than a widow. So weird.
It's weird. It's also definitely a thing in movies. Like, think about how many Nicholas Sparks movies have one couple's partner's died and they're rebuilding their lives.
Raising the children.
Yeah.
Widows are sexy.
Pointing cakes.
Oh God, no. I don't find him attractive. I know he, objectively, I guess the actor is good looking, but I don't find him attractive.
No, even when he's Warner in Legally Blonde, I didn't find him attractive then.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're meant to think he killed his wife as well, because I feel they're bringing the suspicion that he's a vampire. Is there a hint? What happened there? Cold case? Did he do something? Because I think we're definitely meant to be suspicious of him.
100%. And it's weird of Jenna to bring up Logan, but I think it was definitely a way to remind the audience, by the way, guys, don't forget about him. Logan's still potentially around.
Even in the episodes Logan Fell was not spoken about this much. Yes, he was at the door at the end of the episode. He's back. That actually, I remembered that Logan came back. That would be quite shocking if just because he was a nothing guy and now he's back again. Yeah, so the Jenna Rick stuff is the B plot of the episode. And then we have our two big A storylines, which is the girls and Emily Bennett and the haunting, and the boys and their brotherly bonding. We do have a little scene between right back at the start, if we just look at the girl storyline with Elena and Caroline, where Elena's like, oh, I'm not getting involved in your drama, or I tried to fix it. And I don't think she tried very hard.
No, because she was automatically on Bonnie's side.
Well, the thing is as well, but Bonnie, I'm kind of annoyed that they shame Caroline for wanting to give the necklace to Damon. I get that Bonnie actually doesn't understand what's going on. Elena knows that Caroline is being compelled. She knows it. And yet she's like, oh, Caroline, you'll just give the necklace back to Damon.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that. It's Elena is the one in the full loop on both sides.
Yeah. So she knows what's going on. She knows why Bonnie wants to keep it, but she also knows why Caroline's desperate for it is because her mind is being controlled and she doesn't care.
I do feel like Bonnie and Elena are quite dismissive of Caroline this whole episode, when they have the sleepover.
Well, everyone's dismissive of Caroline because we also have a horrible scene with Matt and Caroline.
We have two horrible scenes with them.
Ugh, I hate Matt in this episode and Caroline. The girls are all bitchy to each other. And obviously some are a bit worse, they're a bit worse to Caroline. But Matt in general is horrific.
Because he says hi to Caroline twice and she's quite annoyed by this and goes on a big old rant about how she's not going to be treated this way anymore. And then he calls it a lame girl move.
Yeah, I wrote that down. It's so bad. I get that obviously she to him comes out of the blue with this, but he's particularly mean about it and patronizing. Also, one thing, shout out to the extra acting here. So they're walking, Matt says, hey, Caroline says, hey, Matt. No, Caroline says, what is that? Really loudly. And one of the extras jumps and stares.
No, but Caroline calls it a lame guy move and he turns it back on her. She's overthought it and that it's a lame girl move. But I think she's clearly embarrassed and upset about how drunk she was. And he's just ignoring it. And I get she doesn't need to go as in as she does on Matt. But I don't think she's out of line for calling him out.
But he also admitted that she wasn't reading too much into it and that their cuddle meant something.
No, but he did say it at the same time as saying he didn't like her.
So rude. Horror.
I've never liked you.
They've been friends for years.
Yeah.
You know what, Matt? I've never liked you. Okay? I feel like we've not seen Tyler in ages. Yeah, Matt's all alone. He normally has a little buddy wandering the halls with him.
Even Tyler was bored of him at this point.
I know, yeah. Get over yourself. Yeah, Caroline needs better standards than to go from dating Damon to being romantically entangled with someone who says, I've never liked you.
Yeah. And also he was it was creepy. Cuddling with you, he said it felt creepy.
Oh, did he actually?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not a nice guy. This is what really frustrates me about the character Matt, is he's just not a nice guy in the show and he never is, but they act like he's the best person in the world and he's this paragon of is that the right word? Of doing right. Yeah. Hate it. Hate him.
Matt just has the wrong priorities. Like, his priority is always Elena and will always be her. And we've already seen that with Vicky, like his own sister.
Yeah.
And it's so unfair because he knows Caroline's insecurities and he does absolutely nothing to comfort her about it.
Yeah. I hate this relationship. I have no time for it. Isn't it nice that we've ended the Vicky, Jeremy, Tyler thing that we didn't like to immediately go to the Caroline, Matt, Elena triangle, which I don't like. I don't know about you guys.
No, not a fan.
I mean, it's not just Matt who's being a dick this episode, because we also have Damon harassing Bonnie at school.
Oh, he's so creepy. Like when he strokes her face.
Oh my God.
Oh.
I literally wrote down, he needs to stop touching underage girls and take a step away when he speaks with them.
And I know it's because there are no teachers at the school, but someone really needs to stop this man from hanging out and like just impacting these
students.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they do. No, well, there's only one teacher and he's busy drinking at the bar. He's not got time to be stopping the creeps. Does Bonnie not wonder, because Damon calls her a witch to her face, and she is one. Does Bonnie not wonder how Damon knows about witches? Because she doesn't ask, it doesn't feel like she's that curious about
it. No, I was thinking this. Damon shows all his cards, well, not all of them, but like he talks about Emily and everything, and the rest of the episode, that interaction is not mentioned at all.
She doesn't react when he says witch, but does react when he mentions Emily, and I think she thinks Damon's just referring to like a slur on bitch. Like later when Bonnie tries to tell Caroline she's a witch, and Caroline's like, and don't we all know it?
Because they had, remember when he tried to take the necklace off her and it like zapped him? So maybe she thinks he knows she's a witch because of that, but that means he must know about witches.
No, I don't think she saw that through. I think Kat Graham in this whole episode is amazing. Like, obviously I love her and everything, but when she's like coming through in the morning and she's clearly stressed and scared and she's like sleep deprived and been having all those nightmares, I think the acting is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think her acting when she gets possessed towards the end of the episode is also good. Yeah.
But then, yeah, following kind of the Bonnie, Caroline, Elena storyline. So obviously Bonnie throws the necklace out of the car.
Which I will say, dick move for her to suddenly drive off road when Elena's in the car with her.
Yeah.
Given that she's been in a car accident that like killed her parents.
God, yeah, I didn't even think of that. But yeah.
Oh, but Elena is a bit ridiculous. Like Bonnie is talking about how scared she is of Damon, and Elena's the one who knows the full story, and all she says is like, you just need to stay away from him.
Why can't she? And she does tell Bonnie about vampires, but why doesn't she just decide to tell her in this? She's clearly in danger.
Or at least put people on Vervain. Like, I don't think Elena knows that Bonnie can't be compelled.
Yeah. Oh God, it's so,
and Carol, like, it's so bad.
Can someone put Caroline on Vervain, please? I'm begging you. One thing I did think of when Elena invited Bonnie round, we've definitely not seen it so far, but I can't remember what Bonnie's room looks like. Do we ever go to Bonnie's house?
We do go to Sheila's house.
But do we ever go to Bonnie's house?
No, I don't. Well, we haven't yet. I don't know. I don't think we do.
I don't think we do. Does she not have a home life in the show? Not really.
Yeah, her dad is mentioned, but we never properly go to her house.
It's another way that like they don't quite treat Bonnie like the... And this actually is a very Bonnie-centric episode, so it's not a very good critique to this episode. But I did just think, like, what does her room look like?
Yeah, I think we only see her life at Graham's, not ever at home. Maybe like once or twice later down the line, but definitely not.
Yeah, she doesn't get a lot of focus in that way.
No, not at all. And it would make way more sense safety-wise to go to Bonnie's house, as Damon has not been invited in.
That's a great point, Ellie. And Elena knows that. But it would be inconvenient to not be at her house.
Yeah. But it is true, because actually, like, yeah, obviously Elena gets a kind of home life because she's kind of the star of the show with Damon and Stefan getting kind of their Salvatore house. But Caroline is a side character. You get that kind of with her mum. And
yeah, well, even if you just think about the houses, I know what Caroline's look like. I know what Matt's, I don't know if we've seen it. Yeah, we do. We have seen it. Yeah, I know what Matt's looks like. I know what Tyler's house looks like. I have no idea what Bonnie's. I'm sure we must see it at some point. Do you think we never see it? That's crazy.
I mean, I'm really happy to be proved wrong, but I don't think we do.
We never see Bonnie's room.
I don't think we ever see her room. I think we might see her house at one point. I can't quite remember, but
I'm gonna keep an eye out for that.
Yeah,
maybe it'll be like season 3. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw it like later on. Who knows? Well, they're at the Gilbert house, and Stefan comes round and reveals that the necklace was actually Catherine's, and she gave it to her handmaiden. Emily gave it to Catherine. Yeah. Her handmaiden, which is them not wanting to say slave.
Yeah, just fucking say it.
But it's the whole thing of them not wanting to address the time period that they've set the show in.
But it's such a strange choice to change that intentionally and not address it.
Like, yeah, absolutely. So because of that, Stefan decides he has to get to the bottom of why Daemon has come to Mystic Falls.
And the best way is to be Daemon's friend until he cracks.
Yeah. Also, surely it's the least subtle thing in the world. Like, as in, Daemon has just murdered his best friend and they're like mocking each other and pretending to be like, Stefan's pretending to be Daemon, Daemon's pretending to be Stefan.
I loved that.
It is good. It is good.
I loved it. I will say, I don't think Stefan has that emotional response to Lexi dying. I don't know. It's really weird. Like, even when he wakes up the next day and Daemon's in his room, he's just kind of like, oh, go away.
He's annoyed, but in like a, oh, you stole my toy kind of annoyed as a kid. Like, not as in a, you literally killed someone I love.
I will say, Daemon did apologize. Not a good apology, but I was just surprised that he even like, I just don't think of him as a guy that apologizes ever. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. Because he wants to be friends. That's the thing with Stefan being really obvious. Daemon knows what he's doing. But he still wants to, like, hang out with his baby brother anyway.
Yeah, he still wants to play football. And I will say, vampire football looks really fun.
Yeah. They really did have, like, a vamp darts, vamp football. It was just like a activity day.
And then we find out what Daemon wants.
Catherine.
Yeah, she's not dead.
Yeah, she's still alive.
And I think this is a big shocker in this one as well, because I don't think you know how Stefan reacts or feels about that. Because, like, as far as you know, he loved her. Yeah, he said some, like, that she was selfish and stuff and he was heartbroken. But then she died. Like,
what Stefan kind of talks about in this episode in particular is he says it wasn't real between him and Catherine. So for his point of view, did he love her? Because she was compelling him the whole time. But what Daemon reveals is that Catherine never compelled him and that he was completely in love with her.
Oh, when you can see it in this episode when Stefan twists the knife and he said he was the last person to see Catherine after she spent the night with Daemon. Yeah, and Daemon's face crumbles, but then immediately he's like so pissed off.
We've talked about how gross it is that she was dating both brothers, but she spent the night with Daemon and then went to go see Stefan. That is foul.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate it. I did really enjoy, did you see when Daemon was revealing that Catherine was alive, he was like, Emily did a little spell, and then he did like spirit fingers to mime doing a spell.
So Emily and Daemon had a deal, and we didn't know this before, but turns out that meant Bonnie was actually safe from Daemon, as he was holding up his side of the bargain because he thought Catherine was safe and that Emily would help him get her out.
Which explains why he hasn't just killed her, to be honest, because he's very willing to kill anyone, including Stefan's best friend. Yeah, no, I enjoyed all the brothers' bond. I loved that Daemon kept calling Stefan Steph. I thought it was very sweet. And their little interplay this episode was good. And the reveal of Catherine.
But not only is Catherine alive, but 26 other vampires are also in there. And I think it also shows like Daemon's resentment for the town for taking Catherine away, even after 145 years. He's happy to like set them loose on this town.
Yeah. Also, like, I never want to be on the founder's side because, you know, they're all slave owners and racist. But the vampires that are in the tomb were terrorizing the town and killing loads of people. Like, I'm sorry, they probably deserve to be stopped, or like they had to be stopped in some way.
Yeah, they were refusing to leave town, as every vampire apparently clearly needs to live in Mystic Falls. Like, even Daemon and Stefan refer to it as their home. And I'm like, it's been 145 years. But yeah, I do agree. I think they were very murderous at the best of time rather than when they've now been starved for 145 years.
But Daemon doesn't care as long as he can get Catherine back.
It is kind of, a singular thing. I think it's the same with Lexi. It's almost like collateral damage. Like, as long as his plan stays in place, like, he's not actually doing things. It's interesting. Obviously, at the beginning, he was just killing random people. It's interesting. He doesn't do anything kind of gratuitous with no meaning, like, with no reason. But when there is a reason, he doesn't really care what stands in his way.
I mean, he turned Vicky for no reason, really.
Yeah.
He was bored.
He was bored, yeah.
He's a bad dude. Bad guy. Even if he was charming this episode. Playing his little football. But if Matt saw him play that football, he'd be like, he's a good guy. He's a great football
player.
He
plays football. He'll be there.
He'd be Matt Donovan approved, so it's fine. So while the boys are having their intense bonding day, we get the fun sleepover slash seance.
Is it fun? Oh, gosh.
I really like the three girls and their relationships. I mean, I don't think they're very nice to Caroline, but in general, as the show goes on, I really like their friendship. So I like when it has a little bit more focus as like the three rather than just Bonnie and Elena as like a little twosome.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there were some really sweet moments. I really felt for Caroline when there was a moment when she was like, why do you always leave me out of the conversation? And Elena tries to say that they don't. And then Bonnie's like...
We do. I loved when Caroline was like, the ghost has a name now. It's a great line and very well delivered. She was really funny. Because we as the audience know the supernatural is real in the show. But I love her disbelief. It just played off it quite well.
I also think it's a lot to expect. Like, I think...
Yeah, that she doesn't believe... Are you okay?
I lost my train of thought.
Alice was staring so creepily just at nothing. She was in the middle of saying that. No, sorry.
No.
I think maybe what you were saying, that it's not unbelievable that Caroline doesn't immediately...
Yes,
believe.
Yeah.
Caroline doesn't immediately believe Bonnie that she's a witch, because she has been joking about it. And in fairness to Caroline, when Bonnie told Elena, she didn't just say, I'm a witch. She showed her.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think if either one of you told me you're a witch, I'd be like, what? Like, I think you're joking.
I think you're probably joking. I'd be like, what game are you playing with?
Well, they're in the middle of an argument. She's like, I'm a witch. But to make up, Caroline's like, let's throw a seance. And look, if there's one thing Caroline can do, any event she can deliver.
Organized fun.
Why do the girls agree? Like, Elena and Bonnie know it's real. So why do they agree with this?
Why do they think it's appropriate to light those candles directly on the hardwood floor? Also, they put nothing down. They also have the perfect seance candles. If we had to do a seance here, we'd only have
Taylor.
We'd only have a Taylor Swift themed candle to light.
We care a lot more about the Gilbert house than Elena does.
I know. It's just, if I had those floors, I'd look after them.
Yeah.
She doesn't give a shit. But the seance scene was really good. I liked it.
Really scary.
Yeah.
Like, we already know the necklace disappears early in the episode and then reappears. But when it disappears in the middle of the seance and then reappears in the bathroom and then all three...
All three. I wrote that down. I was like, all three doors are locked. But Elena didn't check Jeremy's, actually. She only checked the one in the hall, so didn't do a very thorough job of checking that. I can't believe that bathroom has three doors. I've got so many questions about this bathroom, but I like that it got more play.
Yeah. And I think the lighting with like the candles and the flickering, I thought it was done like in a kind of almost horror-y way.
It was effective. It was scary. And the acting of them freaking the fuck out, particularly when Bonnie was trapped in the bathroom and she was just screaming, was really good.
To then her being absolutely fine. And like, obviously, automatically, Caroline's pissed off, but Elena has clocked that there's something wrong there.
Yeah. Well, again, Elena knows the supernatural is real, so it's easier to believe it. But yeah, Caroline is just furious because she thinks it's a joke that was being played on her.
Oh, she stormed out of Elena's house without her bag.
Oh, did she?
Both she and Bonnie leave without their bags, but obviously, like, Bonnie's been possessed, so
Emily Bennett came with nothing. She took everything. She took more. She took Bonnie's body with her.
I also think you do get quite a good scene with, like, screaming, and then this, like, the front door's locked and they're like screaming, and then it opens, it's Jeremy just like, yeah.
That was such a brother reaction to be like, I have no time for what my sister's friends are doing. We have the sister Emily in Bonnie's body has gone to the woods, the church? The fell?
The fell
church? I think they call it the fell church. It's like where the vampires were burnt / buried.
Right. Okay. So they go there and they have a confrontation with Damon.
Right. I get why Elena phoned Stefan, but why did Stefan answer the phone right by Damon? Because then Damon just automatically hears everything.
You're an idiot.
He's not very bright.
I think you get this in quite a lot of like the Steph and Damon interactions as well, because like Damon always knows exactly what Stefan's up to, and Stefan can never suss what Damon's up to.
No, we have a lot of effects this episode, because you've got the big fire ring around Bonnie, and we have her pushing Damon in. So we kind of see like maybe Bonnie's not that powerful yet, but we see how powerful witches are, and that they are like a force that can actually stand up to vampires, because previously they've just kind of been running the show.
Yeah, definitely.
And then unfortunately for Damon, the necklace gets destroyed.
And you can see he is furious, and he goes straight in for Bonnie.
He goes to kill her like he would have killed her. I completely forgot that like Damon literally almost killed Bonnie.
I guess Emily didn't hold up her side of the bargain, so he isn't going to hold up his. And like, if it wasn't for Stefan, then Bonnie would be dead. But like, oh my god, Elena is ridiculous in this scene when she's like, oh my god, she's healing. It's like, you add no value here at all.
Yeah, she was like, her neck, it's healing. It's because the audience, think we're idiots. Like,
they also spell it out, like when she's like, does that mean Bonnie will be a vampire? And Stefan's like, no, this is what happens, A, B, C.
Yeah, literally 2 weeks ago you learned, like, I don't know, surely you can remember the very key information of how a person turns into a vampire. I would remember that shit.
No, poor Bonnie. She's had such a shitty week/day or whatever. And it's like she's been haunted by a ghost, she's been attacked, and then Elena just leaves her in the car so that she can have a conversation with Stefan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah. And well, Stefan decides it's over between them. We're in a real like in-between stage.
Yeah, it's like a, oh no, I'm the one being like, no, I can't see you. Oh, actually, I can see you. And then he's like, I can't see you. Like, oh.
What's the thing? Like, Elena's like, I'm ready to date you. I'm like, his best friend of like 100+ years just died. He's maybe not ready to start dating you again. But that's not the reason Stefan uses.
No.
He's very much taken a page out of the Cullen playbook and decided it's better for Elena if he leaves town.
And then you get like when Elena tells Bonnie about everything, it's like Bonnie comforting Elena, and you get a scene of Stefan like crying. And it seems like after everything that's happened, the breakup is like the central like emotion piece.
Yeah. Do we think Stefan's getting upset just because of his breakup with it's not everything else?
No, I think it's his breakup with Elena. That's what I think.
I think so, because you know when Vicky, I can't remember if it was when Vicky died.
I think it was when she turned and Elena was crying.
Yeah, it was like a similar reaction there from Elena.
That's madness. I can't believe he had a stronger reaction.
Yeah, he's a stronger reaction to breaking up with Elena than his best friend dying.
I just feel we've moved on too quickly from Lexi.
Yeah. They really did use her as like a one episode wonder, like she is almost like forgotten about completely in this episode.
When Elena tells Stefan she's going to tell Bonnie, and Stefan's like, do you have to? It's like, Bonnie can't be compelled. She's just been attacked. Obviously, she's got to be told the truth.
Yeah. It is good. I never like when some people don't know the truth in the show. I think it's always a bit boring. So I like that more people are finding out about vampires. And it seemed like a very intense conversation between the two. The writers clearly didn't want to have to write that scene.
No. They were like, let's just play a song. And did anyone write down the lyrics?
Oh, yeah.
No, go on.
So Stefan has just decided he's going to leave town and that he and Elena can't be together. And it is, come back when you can. You've done nothing to make me love you any.
Oh, and also about kind of all the dreams and kind of stuff in this episode, it's a line that's, wake up and dream once more.
Do you think they just Googled like song lyrics? Like songs about dreaming.
They do seem to hit them kind of on the head though. Like, I do feel like all the songs do seem to fit really well. But yeah, they're so obvious.
Is it either one of the showrunners has a wide knowledge of music and like knows what song they want, or is it like they're like, we need to find a song about dreams here, and some editor goes off and adds like a song that hits it very closely that way?
I think it's the second.
Yeah, I think it must be, given how many times it happens, surely.
Yeah, it can't be that someone's perfectly got it in their mind.
And with all those scenes, you have Damon looking like absolutely broken.
Yeah. It's not that I feel for him.
You kind of do. I don't know. In this, I think also because he's been such a villain, to see him actually having such a raw emotion is like, oh. Yeah. And he does say like, I'll go now. Like, it sounds genuine. Like,
it sounds so genuine. Sad.
Yeah.
It is what is good that the show's done very well is that Damon has been the villain up to this point. He's been the primary villain the whole time. But because the actor's so charismatic and he's written in such a fun way, you kind of get on his, not on his side, but you like him. So you like Damon as a character, even though he's awful. So you then can feel bad for him that his life is ruined.
He has been holding out for this one hope and now he has nothing. But like, isn't it mad that it is episode 9, Damon has been our main villain and now...
Well, that's why they really have to introduce, because I was like, oh, it's so stupid that Logan comes in again. But they have to do something, because right now there's no reason for the show to continue, because Stefan's leaving town, Damon's leaving town. They can go back to their normal, boring lives. But you've got Rick and Logan, yeah. So there's clearly another, we've got a leader somewhere else. So we've got Logan knocking on the door. We've got creepy new history teacher.
Yep. It really does. Like, I didn't think, I thought in my head that this was before we started rewatching it, that this was towards the end of season one. It's really not. It's not even halfway through.
I'm really shocked. What I know, like, vaguely the other notes the show has to hit for the rest of the season, but I am shocked how we have more than half of the season left.
Yeah.
Because I thought Damon will be the villain again, but I thought he was the villain for like all of season one. But I must be forgetting things. It's how we're filling the time. But do you know what time it is now?
Stats o'clock.
Yes. So every week we are getting to the stats behind the Vampire Diaries. So we are keeping track of how many people each characters kill, all the relationships in the show, and how many times people come back to life. So what do we have this episode?
No death.
No death.
But we do know about Rick and his missing wife.
Yes, yes. Rick and mystery wife.
And Logan is back from the dead.
I don't know if this counts, but Catherine is back from the dead. Well, she was never dead. And Emily. I don't know if they count as back from the dead.
Oh. I think Catherine definitely not. What we need to decide is, do ghosts count as coming back from the dead? We will have a conversation off mic. Next week, we will update you. Okay. I don't know. We will converse. But I think no to Catherine.
I think you are right. She didn't actually die. We just think she died.
Yeah, that's different. Logan, definitely yes. He's getting added to that pretty exclusive club right now. Yeah. And we will decide on Emily. Yes. And then with no relationship. Oh, no, we've added the relationship. Rick and Miss Dead Wife. Yeah. Okay. So a little bit of trivia. So as we mentioned, we have a brand new character. Matthew Davies plays Alaric Saltzman. Ellie already mentioned his iconic role as Warner Huntington III in Legally Blonde. I was seeing if there was anything else of interest in his IMDb. He was in a movie called Blood Rain with Michelle Rodriguez and Sir Ben Kingsley. I've never heard of this movie before, but I'm bringing it up because the plot is in the 18th century, a vampire escapes from a freak show in which she once participated and teams up with a group of vampire slayers. So this is not his first foray into vampire fiction. And I will say, he's got a really funny haircut in this movie. think an 18th century mullet.
Oh,
I'll tweet out a picture of it, but it's very enjoyable. Also considered for the role of Alaric Saltzman was James Vanderbeek. You'll recognize his face. He's been in lots of things. Like, he's kind of like one of, you know, those guys. But he is most famous for being the Dawson from Dawson's Creek, which is of note because Kevin Williamson, who's the showrunner of Vampire Diaries, his big thing that he did before Vampire Diaries was he was the showrunner of Dawson's Creek. So he wanted to bring him over, but it did not work out. And the other character who we saw a little bit more of this episode was Emily Bennett, played by Bianca Lawson, an iconic actress who has been playing a teenager forever. So if I could go through a little bit of her roles that she's played. So she was in Saved by the Bell in 1993. She played Kendra in Buffy. So I've written Buddy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy the Vampire Slayer in 1999. She was in Dawson's Creek in 2000. She was in Save the Last Dance. She was in American Horror Story Murder House and was in Pretty Little Liars as Maya St. Germain as late as 2012. So she has been playing a 17-year-old for 19 years.
I'm going to come in as a massive fan of Pretty Little Liars, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Vampire Diaries. So obviously Buffy came out pre Vampire Diaries, and then in lockdown I rewatched Buffy and I like lost my mind because I was just like, this person looks exactly the same as Kendra as she does to Emily, Bennett and Maya, and I like couldn't really believe it at the beginning.
She looks the same. Love her. It's crazy. I went on her IMDb and they have like a section on IMDb which is like trademark, which is something they're known for, and hers is trademark extremely youthful appearance. I believe she is no longer playing a teenager because I tried to see when the change happened. So in 2012, she was still doing a few little bits as Maya in Pretty Little Liars. But then in 2012, she was in Teen Wolf, which is, I think, like one of like the, they had sexy vampires and then they tried to make sexy werewolves. So it's like another CW show. And she played a teacher in that. So that was kind of the turning point of her ending her run as a teenager.
How old is she now? Do you know?
She recently had a birthday. I think she's like in her 40s.
Yeah, she's 44. She's so 44. She must have been 30.
I think her birthday was
30,
like last week or something. Yeah. Crazy. I think I saw something for it. Yeah. She also, I'm just talking about Bianca Lawson so much because I love her. But she, a little Buffy trivia for you, Ellie. She was originally cast as Cordelia. Yes, but she had to turn down the role because of contractual obligations for Good Behavior in 1996. So they then brought her back as Kendra. And then my one last fact about Bianca Lawson is she is Beyonce's stepsister. And that's wild. I think that might be it for this week. But we can plug our Twitter.
At Miss Mystic Pod.
Lovely. Where we will put up pictures, polls, and a little updates on the show. And then we also have our Instagram account.
Yeah, Missing Mystic Fools Pod.
Yeah, perfect.
Getting there with this, I feel.
Yes, we're great at marketing. if you really want to support the show, the best thing you can do, that I've been told, is give us 5 stars on whatever platform you are on. Do not give us less. No, thank you. 5 or nothing. But that's it from us for this week. We'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.